Hello and welcome to the first podcast of the Tejano History Podcast. Well, I'm sorry I repeated the name there, but just to clarify a couple of things. First of all, I am one of your hosts, Arnoldo Mata. The podcast is named Tejano History Podcast, although we do use a little bit of introductory music from Little Joe y La Familia. And his great song, Las Nubes. This is not specifically about Tejano music. It may come into play every once in a while, but really what we want to focus on is the history of Tejanos in Texas. We want to focus on going back as far back as we can, where we can identify a Tejano presence in Texas. And I keep going back and forth on that, calling it Tejano in Texas. First of all, let's clarify what we mean by that. Obviously, Texas was here long before Stephen of Austin and his merry band of 300 families came to Texas. It was Texas at that time. It was part of Spain and then part of Mexico. And the Tejanos are essentially the Mexicans and Spaniards who still resided here through all that time, who came here and settled here, and then stayed around after the exploratory trips from the various Spanish explorers, and made a life for them here, and started building up Texas. And then Texas eventually gained its independence, some of them went back to Mexico or moved somewhere in Mexico, although they were from here. But a great many of them stayed here and built their lives and played big roles in the development and history of Texas. And that's what we want to focus on, those Tejanos, as we call them, people of Mexican and Spanish descent who stayed here and built a life in Texas and some of the history. And part of the reason we want to focus on that is that in most history courses, Texas history begins in 1836 with the fall of the Alamo. And we want to focus on some of the history before that, and we want to focus on some of the history after that. So that's what hopefully this podcast will focus on. We're more than happy to listen to ideas for some of our podcasts. So sources, if you have family histories, personal memories, personal recollections, maybe from your parents or your grandparents about their experiences growing up as Tejanos here, we certainly would appreciate getting to know you and getting to hear your stories. We'd more than be willing to discuss that with you. We also want to look at sources, historical sources. And we're certainly going to review some books, and we're going to talk to some historians, and we're going to hopefully uncover some things that, while they may be known by some people, they're not generally known across the state, and notably they're not known by a lot of the people whose families descended from those people that created some of that history. So, on with today's program. Today I just wanted to start with a few recollections of my own, going back to some stories that my father told me of his growing up. My father was born, I think, in 1926. He was born in Hidalgo County, Texas. Our family, at least his side of the family, the Matas, have a history of having come from Zacatecas, I believe. They were brought over in the early part of the 1900s, they were contracted as laborers for the construction of the railroad in Texas, or some of the railroads in Texas in the early part of the 1900s. It was the Mata family, and of course there were many others, I'm sure. Contractors, I imagine construction companies, went into Mexico and tried to recruit families to come up, or tried to recruit workers, and they generally brought their families. And back then, it was a much easier thing to cross from Mexico into the United States to work. In fact, there was almost, from what I can tell, there was almost no hindrance to it. especially if you were contracted labor. So the several of the Mata families, going back to my great grandfather, came over with their families. So it was my grandfather Sabino Mata and his father, and his brothers, Sabino's brothers, who came along, and I imagine, I think also some of Sabino's sisters and their families came across. So the trip came from, they came from Zacatecas, they passed through Laredo, and started working on the railroads. I think eventually, I don't know if that's where they started, but eventually they got to San Antonio, and that's actually where they started spreading out. Some of them actually stayed in San Antonio. Some of them followed the work of railroad construction into the, what is the Winter Garden area, which is kind of an area southwest of San Antonio. It is a big farming and ranching area. So they moved into that area. One of the communities there, Crystal City, apparently, we have some distant relatives there. We have some relatives who stayed on in San Antonio. And then another group of them traveled kind of southeast of San Antonio. They followed the building of the railroad tracks into the Corpus Christi and Robstown area, where we have, where we also have some other relatives. And then Sabino, my great-grandfather, and his bunch came into deep South Texas, which would be McAllen, the McAllen area. And so that's where my dad grew up. My father grew up there. They lived on in the what essentially was outside of McAllen, on the southeast side of outside of McAllen. Really more what is now along closer to the military road area. They lived in areas or close to areas called resacas, which essentially are areas where the river overflows and water kind of goes in those areas. Along those areas, they were essentially sharecroppers. They were farmhands and sharecroppers. And so if you're familiar with the southeast of McAllen, there's a pump house that runs water from the river up north into McAllen and other communities. So you have a series of canals that were dug up to irrigate the region. And the one story that I recall my father talking to me about, so he grew up in the 20s and the 30s, was so by that time you have the Depression and you have Prohibition. And there was a big market of bootleggers, or as he calls them, bootleggers, people who were smuggling liquor and other things from Mexico into the area. And every so often, they would wake up in the mornings and obviously go out to the fields. And on the canal banks, they'd find bodies of bootleggers. And the story was that these were bootleggers who were caught by the Texas Rangers at the time and killed on the spot. It may be that that was the case. It may be that a rival bootlegger, or there was some disagreement with whoever they were selling to, might have killed him. But the prevailing story was that the Texas Rangers and the local sheriff were patrolling the area and would essentially kill people on the spot. This is, I think, one of the key things that, at least in our area, in Hidalgo County and the Rio Grande Valley, that I think other families can relate to. The idea that law and justice were dispensed indiscriminately upon Mexicans, Mexican-Americans, and Tejanos in general, that lawmen were quick to shoot and faced little or no repercussions for it. And that was just an accepted part of life at the time in the 20s, 30s and even into the 40s. And there are other stories that my father told me, similar, about sheriff's deputies and so on, who would stop people or arrest them or jail them for essentially trumped-up charges. And that was part of the things that, one of the things that always sits in my memory, that I always return to back, that sense that you're a group of people who have no control and no power, and that the authorities can essentially have their way with you, and that there was no recourse. You could not bring charges against them. Witnesses would disappear. Even when there were witnesses, they would disappear, or they'd be arrested along with other people. So it was very difficult. In fact, I don't recall a case of or anything that stands out where a law enforcement official was brought to justice. In fact, there are a number of cases where people have, there are witnesses, or there were witnesses. This is events going back into the, as late as the 1950s, and I guess even the 1960s, where people witnessed acts of violence, and yet nothing happened to the law enforcement officials. And it was a time when the local power structure was very tightly controlled by a small group of people, primarily Anglos, although there were some Mexican Americans involved in that. It did not lend itself to justice for Tejanos. So anyway, that's just to give you an introductory idea of what our podcast will be. My co-host Davis Rankin will hopefully be in on the next one, and we will have some good guests to talk about their experiences. We want to focus certainly on some of the history that goes further back, but we also want to focus on more recent things. I think we want to focus on a couple of key events where things have kind of, I don't want to say the tide has turned, but there were some key moments, I think, in Tejano history, at least in South Texas, that we can point to, and where we still have people who are alive, who participated in those events. Things such as the FAR riots, the school walkouts of the 1960s, the change in political atmosphere where local Mexican-Americans took control of the elected structure. And then even, this is going into the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s even. One thinks of the 80s as being relatively modern, and yet it's not until the 80s that we see some significant electoral changes. And we want to talk to people who were elected, who participated in those elections, some of the issues, some of the sense of what was going on and why it was going on, and the results. Some of them, as we'll see, we've already talked to a few people who've given some idea of their experiences. We see in some cases the results were relatively good, and in some cases the results were not that great. In fact, one could say they might be failures, but they learned from those things. Even once they took power and or took charge and control, they learned that what they wanted to achieve was not always as easy as winning an election. In fact, winning an election was barely the start in the broader sense of success for Tejanos in Texas. So I will leave it at that, and thank you very much for listening to our test podcast. Please email us. You can contact me at arnoldo.mata@hotmail.com. That's arnoldo.mata@hotmail.com. Send us any comments you'd like, any thoughts, any possible ideas, any sources that you think we should look at try and research a little bit further. Well, hopefully we're trying to do a podcast a week, but we will see how it goes. And with that, we will close today's show. Thank you.